Good morning, everyone. I start with thanking the organizer for inviting me to this exciting workshop. The problem I'm going to introduce here is a health-related problem. It's not completely in the industrial part, but it's somewhat related to industry. We want to figure out the optimal use of drugs and also how much drugs we need for pandemic influenza. So we all have experienced influenza sometimes during life, or we're going to experience influenza anyway. So I start with some background in influenza infection, mostly in pathogenesis. I move towards epidemiology, and then from that part I go to modeling, mathematical problem, and then eventually we look at the actual problem that we want to get a solution for it. I'm going to rush through my talk because it's a cross-disciplinary area, and I have to give you as much information as I could possibly give you. Okay, start with a little bit background. Influenza is a viral disease and is a respiratory disease. Influenza viruses belong to RNA family viruses. RNA viruses, they have characteristics that they change over time when they replicate in the body of humans or outside the body of humans in animals or some other species. They change over time, and that's what we call them mutation for the virus. And that actually causes seasonal epidemics every year. Because if the virus stays the same, then we get immunity to the virus and we don't get infection, at least for quite some time during life. But because every year we have this seasonal epidemics, is caused by variation in the virus. Generally we have, this is the picture of the virus. We have three types of the virus, influenza virus, A, B, C. A could infect humans, bears, and non-primate mammals, but B and C is specific to human. And in each one we have subtypes, and for example for A, H1N1, N2, H2N2, H3N2, H5N1, these days you hear about this virus a lot. It's an avian virus that's causing a problem recently. It's trying to jump in humans, hasn't been successful yet. And influenza A virus actually causing a lot of epidemics. Basically dominating, even we have co-circulation of influenza A and B with different subtypes every season, but influenza A generally dominates, and the epidemic is mostly because of influenza A virus. What is pandemic? Pandemic is global spread of a new viral strain. When a new virus comes to the human population, the human population doesn't have that much immunity. Immunity is very limited, or there is not immunity at all. And that causes a spread of disease around the globe, and that's called pandemic. So what do we know about the pandemic? Is that we know that they will occur. That's all we know, nothing yet. And what we don't know, interesting and it's causing problem, is when it will occur. We don't know, sometime in future. There's no periodicity or any specific timing for occurrence of pandemics. Where it will originate, it could originate in Canada or Southeast Asia or somewhere in Africa, we don't know. And what virus will cause it, and that one we don't know either. Because if we know that one, then we probably know these things to some extent, and we could produce vaccine and resolve every problem. So 31 pandemics so far documented since 1518, and if we look at the pandemics that were discussed in the literature most in last century, we had three major ones, and we had one also in 1977, which we called it quite a pandemic. It didn't hit the globe, but it went to some extent. 1918 was the most devastating epidemic recorded in human history. 50 million deaths and over 500 million infections. One third of the world was infected at that time. 57, we had H2N2 virus, over 2 million deaths. 68, 1 million deaths with H3N2 virus. And they're all influenza A viruses. So far, every pandemic.
Are these
31
influenza pandemics?
31 influenza pandemics, yeah.
But only 4 in the past 100 years.
Three major ones and one also in 77, which was called quite a pandemic. So these are influenza A viruses. H1N1 and H3N2 are now co-circulating during seasonal influenza. Since 57, we haven't had H2N2, and that might be a little bit problem because immunity in the population is now low. And if that comes up with some kind of mutation, then we might have another pandemic. So next pandemic, H5N1, maybe, who knows, we don't know, maybe H2N2, maybe some other viruses. Nobody knows. But virulence of H5N1 is actually a great concern now. It's about 60% death in humans, those who are being infected. Now, control strategies for influenza infection, we have non-pharmaceutical interventions, include isolation, quarantine. Isolation is for those who are infectious and they basically could transmit the disease. Quarantine is for those who are carrying the virus or they've been exposed to the virus but they're not infectious yet, or we don't know. They might be infectious sometime in the future. I refer to future in about hours, not weeks or months. Social distancing measures, that you could look at school closure or border closure or, you know, permission of social gatherings or things like that, trying to reduce the transmission rate between individuals. Personal protection, equipment like masks, guns, gloves, and that healthcare workers are very familiar with and they use it all the time. If you look at the SARS is basically one of the best examples of global spread of a disease in the 21st century that was contained by using these non-pharmaceutical measures. But these non-pharmaceutical measures, they have generally very limited impact on the control of influenza. Influenza is basically one of the most contagious diseases that we experience. We have pharmaceutical measures, they're pretty good. We have vaccine that we produce, and vaccine is the best strategy, is the most effective strategy for reducing the risk of infection and also subsequent complication of influenza. The problem with vaccine is that it may not be available for the new virus that is coming up, because we have to actually predict the virus that is coming up and go through production process, and that takes time because you have to culture the vaccine, and it takes minimum 3 to 6 months for a good vaccine. So limitation is, might be low efficacy if you produce vaccine very fast, or vaccine might be actually poor in terms of matching the actual virus that is circulating in the season. For example, if you see that some years we have larger epidemics than previous years, it means that the vaccine was to some extent poorly matched with the virus. Insufficient quantities definitely for pandemic is a huge problem. We don't have it at the very beginning, but we might have it during the pandemic, and that's not going to be enough for the human population of the globe. Inadequate immune response is another problem because some individuals don't respond to the vaccine adequately, and they probably come up with very little immune response. Therefore, they're not protected against the disease. Now, so vaccine is a problem for us at the very beginning during the pandemic. We have antiviral drugs, and this is actually the best hope that we have right now for controlling the disease, or at least mitigating the impact of the disease. It could be used for prevention and treatment. Still, limitation applies, inadequate supply, that we have to actually stockpile drugs right now before pandemic strikes. And emergence of drug resistance is a huge issue. That resistant viruses emerge during the pandemic, then we basically lose the efficacy of antiviral drugs, and it's basically useless. Now, antiviral therapy could be used for pre-exposure prophylaxis of susceptible. Pre-exposure prophylaxis means that we use drugs, we give to susceptible individuals before they're exposed to the disease, and we have to actually keep them on treatment for a long period of time. The efficacy of drugs is it's got a short lifetime, it's about 1 day or so, so every day they have to take those medications. It's very expensive, and it requires a large stockpile of drugs. So this is basically infeasible for most countries, and to very limited extent we could afford in some developed countries. Post-exposure prophylaxis is another kind of prevention method that would give prophylaxis to those who have been exposed to disease, or they had contact with some diagnosed infection. So we don't know if they're infected or not, but we start treatment for a short period of time, for example 7 to 10 days, and see if they develop disease or not. Probably we could prevent developing the disease, or we waste the drugs for 7 days rather than wasting drugs for the whole period of the epidemic, 3 months, 4 months, 6 months. But the best thing to do, best use of drugs, is basically treatment of clinical infections. Influenza infection could cause clinical infections. It could go through a symptomatic infection without showing any symptoms. But we are mostly concerned about clinical infection. After a day or so, being in exposed period, or we call it latent period, that virus is replicating. After that, viral titers reaches a certain threshold that the person could transmit the disease, and shortly after that they can show symptoms, headache, fever, and things like that. And then at that point, if I diagnose the person, we can start treatment. The major problem with this is emergence of drug resistance. If we start right at the beginning of clinical disease, when they show symptoms, it's quite unlikely to develop resistance. But as we delay the treatment because of problems in diagnosis or other things, then we're going to end up having higher chance of developing resistance, because virus replicates in the body regardless of anything, and mutations happen regardless of treatment. And if some of the mutations are resistant to the drugs, once we start treatment, then treatment could kill the part that is sensitive to drugs or susceptible to drugs, but it cannot actually prevent the replication of resistant strain. So they could replicate to some extent that the person becomes basically resistant, and then if transmission happens, it's mostly because of resistant viruses. They're basically transferring resistant viruses.
It's less about how much of a host cell response is required for the viral replication. So you could synergistically block the host cell response. For example, I know in HIV therapy, HIV needs a bunch of host cell proteins to get in, and you could block some of those.
Yeah, we have two types of drugs. M2 inhibitors and normalized inhibitors. M2 inhibitors, the old ones, because we use them a lot during seasonal influenza M2, their resistance is almost guaranteed. Almost guaranteed. Normalized inhibitors, they're less prone to selecting resistance. But what they do is, once the virus attacks the cell, they're basically blocking the release of mutations. Yeah. These are basically best drugs so far, but they are more expensive too. Yeah. It's very similar to the process in HIV too. Yeah. Now, competing issues in antiviral strategies, we can reduce the illness, we can reduce infectivity, and as a result, we reduce the transmissibility of the virus to the population through infected individuals. That's a good thing. We could suppress and medicate the epidemic. But so this requires aggressive treatment. If we want to do that part, reduce the total number of infections, we have to aggressively treat clinical infections. But on the other hand, we have to spread the resistance in the population. If resistance takes over, drugs are useless. And that's the best hope we have. And that one says avoid aggressive treatment. So you can now see the problem. There's a trade-off between using high level of treatment and reducing the number of infections. But high level of treatment brings the resistance also up. And therefore, drugs are useless. So we have to have kind of trade-off between these two situations to minimize overall incidence of infection, but also prevent a spread of resistance. So concern is how we use that one, optimal use it, strategic use of drugs. But how we evaluate a good strategy in control of disease through antiviral drugs? I just go through a very quick modeling. How much time I have? 10 minutes? So I have to rush quickly. There's a bunch of susceptible individuals, infection is coming to the population, it starts infecting, they develop disease, and this is basically classical SIR model, SIR. And you've probably heard about susceptible, infected, removed. Removed could include recovered or dead individuals. This is the first equation that probably we used close to 100 years ago. Change of susceptible individuals is equal to rate that they get infection. This is transmission rate between infected and susceptible individuals. They move to infected class. They create some infected class here, and they leave infected class with this rate. This could be either recovery or death rate. How we evaluate if this initial infection could actually cause the epidemic, we have a basic reproduction number, which is the number of infection produced by a single infected case introduced into whole susceptible population. And the number, if that number is greater than 1, then epidemic takes over. It means that the infected person could actually infect some other individuals. But if that number is less than 1, it means that the epidemic will die out because that person couldn't actually infect anyone else. Now for this simple model here, this is the reproduction number. So when we implement control strategy, we try to actually lower this number to below 1 and control the disease. For example, if you have vaccination, we basically reduce the initial number of susceptible individuals in the population because we vaccinate the immune. If we have antiviral treatment, we basically reduce transmission rate of the disease, and beta is reduced. And that's how we control the disease. These are reproduction numbers for previous pandemics. In 1918, the range is between 2 and 2.1. 57 is 1.5 to 1.7. And 68 is between 1.8 and 2.2. So you see that it's above 1, and therefore we have pandemic. Very interesting question. Because in 57 and 68, both of them, we had some kind of exposure before that virus that year, 10, 20 years before that, some kind of exposure to similar virus. For example, in 57, we had very limited number of deaths, and it happened mostly in younger population because elderly seen that similar virus 20 years earlier.
That was going to be my point, but what you're doing is fine, but in a sense when you show these figures, you're not showing the age distribution of the death.
Yeah.
And that's
yeah.
A very important factor.
Yeah, that's fair, but I'm not trying to go through very detailed information, but that was very good question. We had different death profile, and that's because of whether we had previous exposure to the similar virus or not. I'll go to the SIR model with resistance. I had SIR model, very simple one. This is the resistance one. Susceptible individuals, they could go get infection, and here is IU, I call it, because U stands for untreated population. They may not get treatment for some reason that they are not diagnosed or whatever reason. If they get infection, they could get treatment, and I call it IT. The problem with treatment is they can develop resistance. They go to another class, which is IR. I call it, R stands for resistance. And here is actually basically the I population that is split into two classes of untreated, treated, and resistant cases. But the major problem is here. When they transmit resistant infection, treatment is ineffective. So I can't actually, even I treat them, it's useless. And then after that, they can go to remove in class, which is basically either recovery or death. So here's the equations for this simple model. I can share this PDF file of this presentation if you can have equations. But most important parameters in these equations, these are rate of changes of each classes over time. Most important parameters is treatment level, which is P. And it's here, they go to treated class with this coverage, and 1 minus P going to untreated class. Another important parameter is drug efficacy, delta T, which is sitting here. And if the person is treated in infected class, then they have reduced transmissibility compared to those who are not treated. So that's why it's medicating the spread of disease. Another important parameter is rate of developing resistance. Once they go into this class of treated individuals, they can go to resistance class with this alpha T. And the other important part is also relative transmissibility of resistance. We have two different viruses. One is sensitive to drugs, one is resistant. So we start pandemic with sensitive, which is the most contagious virus. But then once resistance develops, resistance doesn't have that severity at the very beginning. It might catch similar severity or pathogenicity, but if that pathogenicity reaches some level, then we have a big problem because the spread is very easy in the population. So that's basically relative transmissibility of resistance compared to sensitive, which is usually less than sensitive strain. Various treatment strategies have been evaluated in the literature. One is constant treatment level throughout the epidemic. We assume that we can actually diagnose 60% of the population of clinical infections and give them treatment. Just discussed here. And the problem with this one is resistance easily emerges in the population. Variable treatment level, we could go with high initial treatment level at the very beginning and then bring it down the treatment level because resistance emerges. So we have to lower actual treatment level. And this one we suggested by Ferguson in Nature, and when we actually implement that, the strategy is quite poor strategy. The other one is adaptive treatment strategy. We go actually reverse to the previous one, initially high then low. We go low, then initially high. This is actually the new strategy we introduced, and we can actually minimize the overall incidence of infection and also prevent the resistance of infection in the population. If you have questions about the principle of this strategy, I can.
Yeah, so I'm just trying to get my head straight. So when there's an onset of a pandemic, just at the beginning, there's relatively few individuals. So isn't that a different strategy of modeling when you just have this few bars?
Well, I'm getting to that part in a couple of slides, but I also address this question in a different context. Just remind me that one. I'm running out of time. I have to finish in, give me 5 minutes. Yeah. Okay, here is a constant treatment strategy. I show you, for example, let's look at when R, this is R not 1.6, reproduction number of the sensitive virus is 1.6, above 1, epidemic could happen. This is the treatment level, and here is the total number of clinical infections. So at every, if I fix treatment level at any stage here, and I keep it fixed for the entire epidemic, I end up having total number of infections sitting on this curve. So as you see, if I increase the treatment level up to some extent, which is probably 78%, I reduce the overall incidence of infection, but then beyond that, aggressive treatment, then again, total number of infections is going up. And the reason is that because resistance emerges in the population for high treatment level. So I have optimal treatment level here for a constant treatment level. It's very hard to find it, but compared with the strategy that we introduced, I assume that I could catch this optimal treatment level. And I have the total number of infections. Now let's move to a strategy that we introduced. Low initial treatment level, conservative at the very beginning, then jump to a high level later during the epidemic. So here is again treatment level. Here is the time that I jump to high treatment level. And here is the comparison between my treatment strategy and treatment strategy at the constant treatment level, which I found 78% treatment level with the total number. So as you see, if I start with 25% initial treatment level, and I jump to 80% at some level, for example, 80% at some time during the epidemic. So I have a point here. And this point comes below 1, according to the color. So I have a better strategy. If I jump to 90%, I have to jump later, about 50 days during the epidemic. As I increase my initial treatment level 50%, then I have to jump to higher treatment levels even later to get lower number of infections. Because otherwise, if that number goes beyond 1, it means that constant treatment strategy was better than my strategy. When I go to optimal treatment level, you see that I can get a little bit better if I jump to much higher treatment level and much later in the epidemic. And here, is when I start above optimal treatment level, which is here, you see that the number is above 1. So I'm doing that. I have to actually jump back to optimal treatment level in a constant treatment strategy.
The key here is a persistent treatment level of 50%.
TC is, if I go back here, TC is actually the number I'm getting here at 78% treatment level.
78%?
Yeah. That's the optimal level I'm getting from this strategy.
So, reach the only
thing
to go below
1
when you jump
something above? Nothing actually comes below 1. Actually, if I start with.
No.
Take
the initial treatment of 50%.
Here, initial treatment of 50%. Okay. I can bring it down below 1 because this blue area is basically below 1. If I jump to higher treatment level, like here, anything above 50%, basically I have to jump above 78% or something.
What's the maximum usable?
It's 100%. It's feasible, but I don't know if we can afford that part, yeah. It goes up to 1. Coverage, treatment of the population. You can treat 100% of the clinical infection if you can diagnose them.
I don't understand the graph. For instance, in the lower left-hand corner graph, you're comparing a persistent 78% treatment level with a treatment level that's 78 then jumps up.
No, I got to get some time to address this question. Okay, let's start from here again. Okay, I have 78% treatment level in a constant treatment strategy. I find the optimal level at 78%, and this is the number that I'm getting here. I don't know, maybe around 20, 7,000-8,000 whatever individuals. Okay, that number is fixed for me. So in a constant treatment strategy, with the best treatment level, I get that many infections in the population. Now I want to compare this number with a strategy that I introduced. I start with low initial treatment level, and then we jump to some treatment levels here, shown in this horizontal axis here, at some time during the outbreak. So I start with 25%, and for example, at day 50, I jump to 90% treatment level.
So I have it right. I mean, I understand that.
Yeah.
Start off with 78.
Yeah.
Which was your original treatment level, which is your TC treatment level?
That was
78%. Right. So you started off with that. You started the lower left corner. Then immediately, if you look at the lower right corner of the lower left graph,
yeah,
you immediately jump to 90% and you're doing worse.
Yeah. Because it says that if I start basically with high treatment level, I'm doing worse because I develop resistance.
Oh, I see.
That's the whole point of it. You can't jump to high treatment level very quickly, aggressively at the very beginning. And that's shown actually here. These are resistant profiles. You see that if you jump to high treatment level very quickly during the earliest stage of epidemic, you develop resistance very quickly. And the scale is quite high. It's about 12 times higher resistance. So that's one we should avoid. Now I'm done. I'm almost done. Now, here is the problem we have. The problem is, we want to minimize the total number of infections. At the same time, we want to prevent resistance in spread. The thing that we have in the actual situation in pandemic is basically we have limited stockpile. All the things that I discussed here is basically when we don't have any limitation on drugs. But we have limitation on drugs, and that could cause a huge problem. Let's look at my strategy. I have very limited stockpile. I can basically cover 8.5% of the population. I start with 25% treatment level, and I jump to 80% treatment level at day 40 during the epidemic. So at some time, I run out of, I can control, but at this time, I run out of drugs, and then I have a second peak of epidemic. This is the total number of infections, and here is resistance. You see that resistance is not coming up because I run out of drugs. If I increase my stockpile a little bit, you see that the same situation happens because I run out of drugs a little bit later, but resistance is higher. So I'm going to have a second peak of really huge peak compared to the first one. Here is another problem with unlimited. Even I have unlimited stockpile, I have the same problem because I started to go to high treatment level too early during the epidemic. Here is another scenario, which is basically a good scenario to some extent, that I have unlimited stockpile, but I started at the right time. So I don't have a second peak, and I don't have that many resistance drops. Final slide. Problem. Okay, assumptions, I have resistance, emergence of resistance, and I have limited stockpile. The one that I discussed before, previous slide, was everything without any limitation drops. But now my problem is I have also limited stockpile. So what is the best strategy? Given that adaptive strategy was the best for unlimited, what is the best strategy to minimize the overall infection, prevent resistance? The major question I have, but we don't have any answer to it. We have some idea, but we never test it, or we don't know what's going to happen. And also, if you can advise on how we actually change our policy if we get some new information during the epidemic. If you come up with some optimal strategy, you should come up with something that how I should implement it if my profile of resistance or epidemic changes during the course of the outbreak. The modeling approach that you could use is basically I use deterministic, but it's very detailed. You can use a stochastic modeling, and you have to make sure that you identify key parameters, because in a stochastic modeling, or when you go towards more heterogeneity modeling, you come up with more critical parameters in modeling, you identify those parts, and if you come up with some kind of models, then I have some limited data to share for validation of models and also prediction. Oh, last slide, just acknowledging people that are currently working on our team in pandemic influenza projects. Sorry, it took a bit longer, but I started also a little bit later. Sorry, again. Thank you.